Cincinnati Public Radio and the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company proudly present William Shakespeare's Macbeth, adapted and directed for radio by Jeremy Dubin, based on the original stage production directed by Darnell Pierre Benjamin. The cast includes Marcus Anthony, Angelique Archer, Ariana Chai, Colleen Doherty, Lennon Hu, and Abigail Nacken. And now, sit back and relax as something wicked this way comes. This is William Shakespeare's Macbeth.
On a blasted heath in Scotland, the air thick with smoke, screams, and striking steel, a vicious and bloody battle is being fought. On one side, the army of good King Duncan, Scotland's rightful king. On the other, the troops of the treasonous MacDonald, Thane of Cawdor. This one-time loyal bannerman of the king has turned traitor, and his number swelled with foreign aid is leading an uprising seeking to usurp the throne. The battle has descended into sheer chaos as the ranks have broke, Scot fighting Scot, embroiled in the mud, the blood, and the rain. On a cliff, high above the battlefield, three unearthly and grotesque figures survey with satisfaction the scene below.
When shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain?
When the hurly-burly's done, when the battle's lost. And
that will be ere the set of sun.
Where the place?
Upon the heath.
There to meet Macbeth.
Fair is foul, and foul is fair. Hover through the fog and filthy air.
The Thane of Ross hurries out of the tent to seek Macbeth and deliver the king's message that in addition to her current title, Thane of Glamis, she has been awarded the title Thane of Cawdor too. Meanwhile, on the edge of the battlefield, the three unholy figures have reconvened. They too seek Macbeth and her brother-in-arms Banquo, for they have a prophecy to deliver.
Oh, what bloody man is that? Or he can report, as seemeth by his plight, of the revolt, the new estate.
Hail, brave friend! Say to the king the knowledge of the broil as thou didst leave it.
Doubtful it stood, as two spent swimmers that cling together and choke their art. The merciless MacDonald, worthy to be a rebel, for to that the multiplying villainies of nature swarm upon him. From the western isles of kerns and gallow glasses is supplied, and fortune on his damned quarrel smiling, showed like a rebel's hoard. But all's too weak for brave Macbeth. Well, she deserves that name, disdaining fortune with her brandished steel, which smoked with bloody execution. Like valor's minion carved out her passage till she faced the slave, which ne'er shook hands nor bade farewell to him till she unseamed him from the knaves to the chops and fixed his head upon our battlements.
Oh, valiant cousin! Dismayed not this, our captains Macbeth and Banquo.
Yes, as a spare the eagle or the hare the lion. If I say sooth, I must report that they were as cannons overcharged with double cracks, so they doubly redoubled strokes upon our foes.
Yes! Oh! Oh!
So well thy words become thee as thy wounds. For no more that Thane of Cawdor shall deceive our bosom entrance. Go pronounce his present death, and with his former title, greet Macbeth.
I'll see it done.
What he hath lost, noble Macbeth hath won.
The Thane of Ross hurries out of the tent to seek Macbeth and deliver the king's message that in addition to her current title, Thane of Glamis, she has been awarded the title Thane of Cawdor, too. Meanwhile, on the edge of the battlefield, the three unholy figures have reconvened. They, too, seek Macbeth and her brother-in-arms, Banquo, for they have a prophecy to deliver.
Where hath
hast thou been, sister?
Killing swine.
Sister, where thou?
Look what I have.
Show me, show me.
Here I have a pilot's thumb, wrecked as homeward he did come.
a drum, Macbeth doth come.
So foul and fair a day I have not seen.
What are these? So withered and so wild in their attire, that look like not the inhabitants of the earth, and yet are aunts.
Speak, if you can. What are you?
All hail, Macbeth! Hail to thee, Thane of Glam.
All hail, Macbeth! Hail to thee, Thane of Cawdor.
All hail, Macbeth! Thou shalt be king hereafter.
My noble partner, you greet with present grace and great prediction. To me you speak not.
Hail!
Lesser than Macbeth and greater.
Not so happy, yet much happier.
Thou shalt get kings, though thou be none. So all hail Macbeth and Banquo.
Banquo and Macbeth,
all hail.
Stay, you imperfect speakers, tell me more. By Sinel's death, I know I am Thane of Glamis, but how of Cawdor? And to be king stands not within the prospect of belief. Speak, I charge you.
Whither are they vanished?
Into the air.
Were such things here as we do speak about? Or have we in the insane route that takes the reason prisoner?
Your children shall be king.
You shall be king.
And Thane of Cawdor too, went it not so?
To the selfsame tune and words.
The two soldiers are startled by the approach of the Thane of Ross.
Who's here? The king hath happily received Macbeth, the news of thy success, and for an earnest of a greater honor, he bid me, from him, call thee Thane of Cawdor.
What? Can the devil speak true?
Glamis and Thane of Cawdor, do you not hope your children shall be kings? When those that gave the Thane of Cawdor to me promised no less to them.
As Banquo draws Ross aside to question him further, Macbeth muses on what the witch's prophetic words may portend.
This supernatural soliciting cannot be ill, cannot be good. If ill, why hath it given me earnest of success commencing in a truth? I am Thane of Cawdor. If good, why do I yield to that suggestion whose horrid image doth unfix my hair and make my seated heart knock at my ribs? My thought, whose murder yet is but fantastical, shakes so my single state of man that function is smothered in surmise and nothing is but what is not.
Look how our partner's wrapped.
Give me your favor. My dull brain was wrought with things forgotten. Think upon what hath chanced. And at more time, let us speak our free hearts each to other.
Very gladly.
Their conversation is interrupted by the arrival of King Duncan, his son, Malcolm, and a host of lords, soldiers, and attendants.
Oh, worthiest cousin! The sin of my ingratitude, even now, was heavy on me. Only I have left to say, more is thy due than more than all can pay.
The service and loyalty I owe in doing it pays itself.
Sons, kinsmen, thanes, and those whose places are the nearest, know that we will establish our estate upon our eldest, Malcolm, whom we name hereafter the Prince of Cumberland.
Macbeth, in whose mind the idea of becoming king has taken root, finds herself furious that Duncan has named her son Malcolm as heir to the throne, and inwardly seethes.
The Prince of Cumberland! That is a step on which I must fall down, or else o'erleap, for in my way it lies. Stars, hide your fires.
Let not light see my black and deep desires.
From hence to Inverness, and bind us further to you.
I'll be myself the harbinger, and make joyful the hearing of my wife with your approach. So humbly take my leave.
Ah, my worthy Cawdor.
Macbeth makes her way to her castle at Inverness, followed closely by King Duncan, Malcolm, and their entourage. But she has sent before her a letter for her wife, Lady Macbeth, who reads it eagerly, barely able to believe the message it contains.
They met me in the day of success, and I have learned by the perfectest report that they have more in them than mortal knowledge. Whilst I stood rapt in the wonder of it, came missives from the king, who all hailed me Thane of Cawdor, by which title before the Weird sister saluted me and referred me to the coming on of time with, "Hail, king that shalt be! This have I thought good to deliver thee, my dearest partner of greatness. Lay it to thy heart, and farewell. Glamis thou art, and Cawdor, and shalt be what thou art promised. Yet I do fear thy nature. It is too full of the milk of human kindness to catch the nearest way. Hie thee hither, that I may pour my spirits in thine ear, and chastise with the valor of my tongue all that impedes thee from the golden round. Come, you spirits that tend on mortal thoughts, unsex me here, and fill me from the crown to the toe, top full of direst cruelty. Make thick my blood. Stop up the access and passage to remorse. Come, thick night, and pall thee in the dunnest smoke of hell, that my keen knife see not the wound it makes, nor heaven peep through the blanket of the dark to cry, hold, hold!
Oh, my dearest love,
Duncan comes here tonight.
And when goes hence?
Tomorrow, as he purposes.
Oh, never shall sun that morrow see.
To all our nights and days to come, give solely sovereign sway and masterdom.
We will speak further.
Only look up clear. To alter favor ever is to fear. Leave all the rest to me.
The king, along with Malcolm, Banquo, and all the rest, soon arrive at Inverness, where Lady Macbeth, revealing ne'er a glimmer of any ill intent, warmly greets them. That night, a great banquet is held to honor his arrival. But while Duncan and his company revel and carouse, Macbeth slips out into the courtyard, conflicted over the terrible and traitorous deed she and her wife are conspiring to commit.
He's here in double trust. First, as I am his kinsman and his subject, strong both against the deed. Then, as his host, who should against his murderer shut the door, not bear the knife myself. Besides, I have no spur to prick the sides of my intent, but only vaulting ambition, which o'erleaps itself and falls on the other.
How now? What news?
He hath almost supped. Why have you left the chamber?
We will proceed no further in this business.
He hath honored me of late, and I have bought golden opinions from all sorts of people, which should be worn now in their newest gloss, not cast aside so soon.
Was the hope drunk wherein you dressed yourself?
Hath it slept since? And wakes it now to look so green and pale at what it did so freely?
Wouldst thou have that which thou esteemed the ornament of life, and live a coward in thine own esteem, letting I dare not wait upon thy wood, like a poor cat in the attic?
Prithee, peace!
I dare do all that may become a man. Who dares do more is none.
What beast was then that made you break this enterprise to me? When you durst do it, then you were a man. Mm-hmm. And to be more than what you were, you would be so much more the man. I have given suck, and know how tender 'tis to love the babe that milks me. I would, while it was smiling in my face, have plucked my nipple from its boneless gums and dashed the brains out, had I so sworn as you have done to this.
If we should fail?
We fail! But screw your courage to the sticking place, and we'll not fail. When Duncan is asleep,
His two chamberlains will I, with wine and wassail, so convince that memory, the warder of the brain, shall be a fume, when, in swinish sleep, their drenched natures lie as in a death. What cannot you and I perform upon the unguarded Duncan? What not put upon his spongy officers? Who shall bear the guilt of our great quell?
Oh, bring forth men, children, only, for thy undaunted metal should compose nothing but males. Will it not be received when we have marked with blood the sleepy two of his own chamber and used their very daggers that they have dunned?
Who dares receive another, as we shall make our griefs and clamors roar upon his death.
I am settled. And bend up each corporal agent to this terrible feat. Away! And mock the time with fairest show. False face must hide what the false heart doth know.
With renewed conviction to their murderous plot, the two rejoin the feast, which soon winds down as the hour grows late. Most of the guests, King Duncan included, make their way towards their beds for the night. But not all find sleep so easily. Banquo, troubled with thoughts of the witch's prophecies, has sought out some fresh air in the courtyard, where he comes across his young son, Fleance, who has joined him at the castle and is up far past his bedtime.
How goes the night, boy?
The moon is down. I have not heard the clock.
And she goes down at 12?
I takes 'tis later, sir.
Who's there?
Banquo spins, sword in hand, surprised to find his host, Macbeth, lurking in the shadows.
What, friend? Not yet at rest?
Well.
The king's abed.
I dreamt last night of the three wayward sisters. To you they have shown some truth.
I think none of them. Yet, when we can entreat an hour to serve, we would spend it in some words upon that business, if you would grant the time.
At your kind's leisure.
Good repose the while.
Thanks, friend. Good luck to you.
Macbeth watches Banquo and Fleance as they head off towards their chambers. As she turns back towards the direction in which he was headed, her eyes widen, seeming to focus on the empty air in front of them.
Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle towards my hand. Come, let me clutch thee. I have thee not, and yet I see thee still. Art thou not, fatal vision, sensible to feeling as to sight? Or art thou but a dagger of the mind, a false creation proceeding from the heat-oppressed brain? Thou marshalst me the way that I was going, and such an instrument I was to use. Mine eyes are made the fools of the other senses, or else worth all the rest. I see thee still, and on thy blade and dudgeon gouts of blood, which was not so before. There's no such thing. It's the bloody business which informs thus to mine eyes. Whiles I threat, he lives. Words the heat of deeds to cold breath gives. I go, and it is done. The bell invites me. Hear it not, Duncan, for it is a knell that summons thee to heaven or to hell.
With dread purpose, Macbeth ascends the stairs to King Duncan's chambers. Elsewhere in the castle, Lady Macbeth has discharged her part of the plot, having plied Duncan's guards with so much wine they have passed out. Now she anxiously awaits Macbeth and word that the deed has been done.
That which hath made them drunk hath made me bold. That which hath quenched them hath given me fire. Hark! Peace.
Who's there? What ho?
Alas, I'm afraid they've awaked and 'tis not done. The attempt and not the deed confounds us. Hark! I laid their daggers ready. He could not miss them. Had he not resembled my father as he slept, I had done it. My partner,
I have done the deed. Dost thou not hear a noise?
I heard an owl shriek and the crickets cry. Did not you speak?
When?
Now.
As I descended?
Aye.
Hark! Who lies in the second chamber?
There are two lodged together.
One cried, God bless us, and amen the other, as they had seen me with these hangman's hands.
Listening to their fear, I could not say amen when they did say, God bless us.
Consider it not so deeply.
But wherefore could I not pronounce amen? I had most need of blessing and amen stuck in my throat.
These things must not be thought after these ways, so it will make us mad.
Oh, methought I heard a voice cry, sleep no more. Macbeth doth murder sleep. Macbeth shall sleep no more.
Who was it that thus cried? My worthy lord, you do unbend your noble strength to think so brain sickly of things. Go, get some water and wash the filthy witness from your hands. Why have you brought the daggers from the place?
Oh, God.
They must lie there. Go carry them and smear the sleepy grooms with blood.
Oh, go no more. I'm afraid to think what I have done. Look once again. I dare not.
Infirm of purpose. Give me the daggers. If he do bleed, I'll gild the faces of the grooms withal, for it must seem their guilt.
Whence is that knocking? How is't with me that every noise appalls me? What hands are here? Will all great Neptune's ocean wash this blood clean from my hand? No! This my hand will rather the multitudinous seas incarnadine, making the green one red.
My hands are of your color, but I shame to wear a heart so white. Hark, there's knocking at the south gate. Retire we to our chamber. A little water clears us of this deed. How easy is it then? Your constancy hath left you unattended. Hark, more knocking. Get on your nightgown, lest occasion call us and show us to be watchers. Be not lost so poorly in your thoughts.
To know my deeds were best not know myself. Wake, Duncan, with thy knocking. I would thou couldst.
They hurry to their chamber, wash the blood from their hands, and having exchanged their spattered garments for innocent nightclothes, Macbeth goes to answer the door. It is the noble Macduff, another great general in Duncan's army. He has come to accompany the king on the rest of his journey home.
Good morrow, both.
Is thy king stirring, worthy thing?
Not yet.
He did command me to call timely on him. I have almost slipped the hour.
This is the door.
I'll make so bold to call, for 'tis my limited service.
Macduff enters the king's chambers and reels at the sight before him.
Horror! Horror!
What's the matter? The
most sacrilegious murder hath broke ope the Lord's anointed temple and stolen thence the life of the building.
What is you say, the life?
Awake! Ring the alarum bell, murder and treason! Awake! Banquo! Malcolm!
What's the business? Such a trumpet calls to parley the sleepers of the house. Speak! Speak!
Our royal master's murdered.
Woe, alas! What? In our house.
Dear Duff, I prithee contradict thyself and say it is not so.
What is amiss? You are and do not know it.
Your royal father's murdered.
Oh, by whom?
Oh, yet I do repent me of my fury that I did kill them.
Wherefore did you so?
Who could refrain that had a heart to love, and in that heart courage to make his love known?
Let us meet and question this most bloody piece of work to know it further. Fears and scruples shake us.
Let's briefly put on manly readiness and meet in the hall together.
Well contended.
As they all file from the room, Malcolm stays behind and considers his circumstances.
What will I do? I'll not consort with them. To show an unfelt sorrow is an office which the false man does easy. I'll to England. There are daggers in men's smiles. The near blood, the nearer bloody.
Unsure of who to trust or how deep the conspiracy goes, Malcolm indeed flees the country, seeking safety in the neighboring kingdom of England. But his flight throws on him suspicion of his father's murder, a narrative that Macbeth is quick to propagate. With the king dead and his heir absconded, Scotland finds itself with an empty throne. And just as the weird sisters promised, the sovereignty falls upon Macbeth. Though not all are convinced that Macbeth is as honorable as she seems, the noble Macduff is notably absent from the coronation, and even Banquo has begun to speculate what Macbeth may have done to encompass the crown.
King Cawdor gloms all as the wayward women promised, and I fear
thou playedst most foully for it. Yet it was said it should not stand in thy posterity, but that myself would be the root and father of many kings, if there come truth from them. But hush, no more.
Here's our chief guest.
If he had been forgotten, it had been as a gap in our great feast and all things unbecoming.
Tonight we'll hold a solemn supper, sir, and I'll request your presence.
Let your highness command upon me, to the which my duties are with a most indissoluble tie forever knit.
Ride you this afternoon.
Aye, my good lord.
Goes Fleance with you?
Aye, my good lord. Our time does call upon us.
I wish your horses swift and sure of foot. Farewell. Let every man be master of his time till supper time.
Upon her request, Macbeth is left to her solitude, her gaze lingering on the retreating figures of Banquo and his son Fleance.
Our fears in Banquo stick deep. He chid the sisters, for in first they put the title of king upon me, and then bade them speak to him. Then, prophet-like, they hailed him father to a line of kings. Upon my head they placed a fruitless crown and put a barren scepter in my gripe, no son of mine succeeding. If it be so, for Banquo's issue have I filed my mind. For them, the gracious Duncan, have I murdered to make them kings, the seed of Banquo, kings, rather than so. Come, fate, into the list and champion me to the utterance. Who's there?
At the door, two cloaked and menacing figures have appeared. Macbeth regards them with an air of familiarity.
Was it not yesterday we spoke together?
It was. So please, your highness.
Both of you know Banquo was your enemy.
True, my lord.
So is he mine. And in such bloody distance that every minute of his being thrust against my nearest of life. And thence it is that I to your assistance do make love.
We shall, my lord, perform what you command us.
Though our lives.
Your spirit shine through you. Within this hour at most, I will advise you where to plant yourselves. The moment, aunt. For it must be done tonight. Fleance, his son that keeps him company, whose absence is no less material to me than is his father's, must embrace the fate of that dark hour. Resolve yourselves apart. I'll come to you anon.
We are resolved, my lord.
Abide within. I'll call upon you straight. Banquo, thy soul's flight, if it find heaven, must find it out tonight.
Evening falls, and while inside the palace preparations are being made for Macbeth's coronation feast, outside, preparations of a different sort are being made. At Macbeth's instruction, the two unsavory figures lie in ambush, awaiting the approach of Banquo and his son.
Hark!
Ah, give us a light there, ho!
Dint is he!
Stand to it!
Huh. It'll be rain tonight.
Then let it come down.
The murderers leap forth from where they were hid, running Banquo through.
Fly, good Fleance! Fly! Fly!
As one murderer slashes Banquo's throat, the other turns to dispatch his son, only to find that Fleance has fled, disappearing into the woods surrounding the castle.
There's but one down! But the sun has fled.
We've lost the best half of our fair.
Well, let's away and say how much is done.
The murderers set out for the castle, where inside Macbeth has just begun her coronation feast.
You know your own degrees. Sit down. At first and last, the hearty welcome.
Thanks to your majesty.
Ourself will mingle with society and play the humble host. Our hostess keeps her state, but in best time we will require her welcome.
Pronounce it for me, sir, to all our friends, for my heart speaks they are welcome.
Be large in mirth! Anon we'll drink a measure the table round.
Hear, hear.
Even as Macbeth raises her glass to toast, she spies one of the bedraggled and blood-spattered murderers lurking in the entryway. Excusing herself from her guests, she pulls the murderer aside.
There's blood on thy face.
'Tis Banquo's, then.
'Tis better thee without than he within.
My lord, his throat is cut. That I did for him.
Thou art the best of the cutthroats.
My royal king, Fleance escaped.
There comes my fit again. But Banquo's safe.
Aye, my good lord. Safe in a ditch he bides, with 20 trenchant gashes to his head. The least a death to nature.
Thanks for that. Get thee gone. Tomorrow we'll hear ourselves again.
My royal lord, you do not give the cheer.
Oh, sweet remembrancer. Now good digestion waits on appetite and health on both.
Here.
Oh, here had we our country's honor roofed with the graced person of our Banquo present. Oh,
his absence, king, lays blame upon his promise.
True.
May it please your highness to grace us with your royal company.
The table's full.
Here is a place reserved.
Where?
Here, my good lord.
As Macbeth approaches the table, her eyes are met with a horrific sight. There, in her seat, staring with cold and accusing eyes, blood pouring from the gash in his throat, sits Banquo. He locks his gaze upon Macbeth and slowly shakes his head.
Which of you have done this?
My lord.
My good lord?
Thou canst not say I did it. Never shake thy gory locks at me!
Oh, gentlemen, rise. Your highness is not well.
Sit, worthy friends. My lord is often thus and hath been from her youth. Pray you keep seat. The fit is momentary. Upon a thought she will again be well. Feed and regard her not.
Are you a man?
Aye, and a bold one that dare look on that which might appall the devil.
Oh, proper stuff. This is the very painting of your fear. This is the air-drawn dagger which you said led you to Duncan. Why do you make such faces? When all is done, you look but on a stool.
Avaunt! And quit my sight! Let the earth hide thee. Thy bones are marrowless. Thy blood is cold. Thou hast no speculation in those eyes which thou dost glare with.
Oh, think of this, good peers, but as a thing of custom. 'Tis no other, only it spoils the pleasure of the time.
Unreal mockery! Hands! Hands!
When Macbeth forces her gaze once more upon the chair, she finds the gory, ghostly apparition has gone.
Why so? Being gone, I am a man again.
Oh, pray you, sit still.
You have displaced the mirth, broke the good meeting with most admired disorder.
You make me strange, even to the disposition that I owe, when now I believe you can behold such sights and keep the natural ruby of thy cheeks when mine is blanched with fear.
What sights, my lord?
Speak not. Question enrages her. She grows worse and worse. At once, good night.
Good night, and better health attend your majesty.
A kind good night to all.
It will have blood, they say. Blood will have blood. Stones have been known to move, and trees to speak. I will tomorrow, and betimes I will to the weird sisters. More shall they speak, for now I am bent to know by the worst means the worst. I am in blood stepped in so far that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as go o'er.
Despite Lady Macbeth's assurances, her lord's extraordinary behavior at the banquet does not go unremarked upon. Rumors and suspicions begin to spread. The good Macduff secretly strikes out for England to seek Malcolm, Duncan's son and true heir to the Scottish throne. Macbeth, meanwhile, her sanity slowly unraveling, seeks the three witches and the supernatural knowledge they possess. In a cave, on a heath, gathered round a boiling cauldron, the weird sisters prepare for Macbeth's arrival.
Thrice the brinded cat hath mewed.
Thrice and once the hedge pig whined.
Harpier cries, 'tis time, 'tis time!
Round about the cauldron go, in the poison entrails throw.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
Fillet of a fenny snake, in the cauldron boil and bake.
before a charm of powerful trouble. Like a hell broth boil and bubble.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble.
By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes. Open locks, whoever knocks.
How now, you secret black and midnight hags? What is to do?
A deed without a name.
I conjure you by that which you profess. Howe'er you come to know it, answer me to what I ask.
Speak, demand!
We'll answer.
Say, if thou'st rather hear it from our mouths or from our masters.
Call him. Let me see him.
Come high or low, thyself and office deftly show.
From the cauldron arises a severed head bedecked with armored helmet.
Macbeth, 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 beware Macduff, beware the Thane of Fife, dismiss me, enough!
Thanks for that. Thou hast harped my fear aright. But one word more.
He will not be commanded. Here's another one more potent than the first.
Now from the cauldron arises a shriveled and bloody infant.
Macbeth! 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 Be bloody, bold, and resolute. Laugh to scorn the power of man. For none of woman born shall harm Macbeth.
Then live, Macduff! What need I fear of thee? But yet I'll make assurance, double sure, thou shalt not live!
A third apparition arises, a child crowned.
Be lion-mettled, proud! Take no care who chafes, who frets, or where conspirers are! Macbeth shall never vanquished be until great Burnham Wood unto high Dunstan and Hill shall come against her.
That will never be. Who can impress the forest, bid the tree unfix his earth-bound root? What? Is this so?
Aye, all this is so.
But why stands Macbeth thus amazedly?
Where are they? Gone? Oh, let this hour stand I accursed in the calendar. Come in, without there.
What's your grace's will?
Saw you the weird sisters?
No, my lord.
I did hear the galloping of horse. Who was that came by?
'Tis two or three, my lord, to bring you word. Macduff is fled to England.
Fled to England?
Aye, my good lord!
Time! Thou anticipatest my dread exploits. The castle of Macduff I will surprise. Seize upon Fife. Give to the edge of the sword his wife, his babes, and all unfortunate souls that trace him in his line. No boasting like a fool. This deed I'll do before my purpose cool.
Macbeth is as good as her word. The very same unsavory cutthroat she employed to dispatch Banquo, she sends to the castle of Macduff, where they ruthlessly massacre Macduff's wife, children, and any else that they can find. Macduff, meanwhile, blissfully unaware of what has transpired, has arrived in England and succeeded in finding Malcolm. To him, Macduff pledges his allegiance and his aid to defeat the tyrannical Macbeth and take back the throne.
Oh, Scotland! Scotland! O nation miserable with an untitled, tyrant bloody sceptered! When shalt thou see thy wholesome days again?
Macduff, this noble passion, child of integrity, hath from my soul wiped the black scruples, reconciled my thoughts to thy good truth and honor. What I am truly is thine and my poor country's to command. Thither indeed, before thy here approach, old Seaward with 10,000 warlike men already at a point with setting forth. Now, pull together
and our chance of goodness be like our warranted quarrel.
See who comes here.
My countryman, but yet I know him not.
My ever gentle cousin, welcome hither.
Alas, poor country.
What's the newest grief?
That of an hour's age doth hiss the speaker. Each minute teems a new one.
How does my wife?
Why, well.
And all my children?
Well, too.
The tyrant has not battered at their peace.
No, they were well at peace when I did leave them.
Well, how goes it?
Now is the time of help. Your eye in Scotland would create soldiers, make our women fight to doff their dire distresses.
Oh, be it their comfort, we are coming thither. A gracious England hath lent us seaward and 10,000 men.
Would I could answer that comfort with the like. But I have words that would be howled out in the desert air where hearing should not latch them.
What concern they? Is it a general cause or is it a fee grief? Due to some single breast.
No mind that's honest, but in it shares some woe, though the main part pertains to you alone.
If it be mine, keep it not from me. Quickly, let me have it.
Let not your ears despise my tongue forever, which shall possesses them with the heaviest sound that ever yet they heard.
I guess at it.
Your castle is surprised. Your wife and babes, savagely slaughtered.
Merciful heavens, give sorrow words. The grief that does not speak whispers to the o'erfraught heart and bids it break.
My children too?
Wife, children, servants, all that could be found.
And I must be from thence. My wife killed too?
I have said.
Be comforted. Let us make medicines of our great revenge to cure this deadly grief.
She has no children! Did you say all? Oh, hellkites, all want my pretty chickens and their dam at one fell swoop.
Dispute it like a man.
I shall do so, but I must also feel it as a man. I cannot but remember such things were. That were most precious to me.
Be this the whetstone of your sword. Blunt not your heart. Enrage it.
I could play the part of a woman with mine eye, and a braggart with my tongue. But gentle heavens, cut short all intermission. Front to front, bring thou this fiend of Scotland, and myself within sword's length set him.
This tune goes manly. Come, go we to the king. Our power is ready. Our lack is nothing but our leave. Macbeth is ripe for shaking, and the powers above put on their instruments.
Back in Scotland, at Dunsinane Castle, Lady Macbeth has been exhibiting some curious behavior. A doctor has been sent for, and outside of Lady Macbeth's chambers, he consults with Macbeth's trusted servant.
Doctor! Doctor! Since Her Majesty has gone into the field, I have seen her rise from her bed, throw her nightgown upon her, unlock her closet, take forth paper, write it, fold it, afterwards read it, seal it, and again return to bed. All this time is the most fast asleep.
In this slumbery agitation, what at any time have you heard her say?
That, madam, which I will not report after her. Lo you, here she is, and this her very guise upon my life. Fast asleep. Observe her, stand close.
You see, her eyes are open.
Aye, but their sense is shut.
What is it she does now? Look how she rubs her hands.
This is an accustomary action of hers to seem thus washing her hands. I have known her to continue this a quarter of an hour.
Yet here's a spot.
Hark, she speaks.
Out, damn spot. Out, I say. One, two, then 'tis time to do it. Hell is murky.
Fie, my lord, fie! A soldier and a feared, who needs we fear, who knows it when none can call our power to account.
Yet, who would have thought the old man to have had so much blood in him?
Do you mark that?
The Thane of Fife
had a wife. Where is she now?
What? Will these hands ne'er be clean? No more of that, my lord, no more of that. You mar all with this starting.
Go to, you have heard what you should not.
She has said what she should not, I am sure of that. Heaven knows what she has known.
Here's the smell of the blood still. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand.
What a sigh is there! The heart is sorely charged.
I would not have such a heart in my bosom for the dignity of the whole body.
To bed! There's knocking at the gate! Come!
Unnatural deeds do breed unnatural troubles. Infected minds to their death pillows will discharge their secrets. Oh, God forgive us all. Look after her. My mind, she's mated and amazed my sight. I think, but dare not speak.
Good night. Good doctor.
Elsewhere in the castle, the near-manic Macbeth has received word that Malcolm and Macduff, in command of the English army, have arrived in Scotland.
Let them fly, all, till Birnam Wood removed to Dunsinane. I cannot taint with fear. What's the boy, Malcolm? Was he not born of woman? The spirits that know all mortal consequences have pronounced me thus. Fear not, Macbeth. No man that's born of woman shall e'er have power upon thee. Then fly, false thanes, and mingle with the English epicures. The mind I sway by and the heart I bear will never sag with doubt nor shake with fear. The devil damn thee, black! Thou cream-faced loon, where got'st thou that goose look?
There is 10,000.
Geese, villain,
soldiers.
Go prick thy face and overread thy fear, thou lily-livered boy.
Oh, what?
Soldiers, patch. Death of thy soul. Those linen cheeks of thine are counselors to fear. What soldiers, whiteface?
English forces, so please you.
Take thy face hence.
Oh, I am sick, Edward.
This push will cheer me ever, or deceit me now. I have lived long enough. My way of life is fallen into the sere, the yellow leaf, and that which should accompany old age as love, honor, obedience, troops of friends, I must not look to have. But in their stead, curses, not loud, but deep, mouth honor, breath which the poor heart would fain deny and dare not. I'll fight till from my bones my flesh be hacked. Give me my armor.
'Tis not needed yet.
I'll put it on. Send out more horses. Scour the country round. Hang those that talk of fear. Bring me my armor.
On the edge of Birnam Forest, Malcolm, Macduff, and Ross halt their army.
Cousins, I hope the days are near at hand that Chambers will be safe.
We doubt it nothing.
What wood is this before us?
The wood of Birnam.
Let every soldier hew him down a bough and bear it before him. Thereby shall we shadow the numbers of our host and make discovery ere in report of us.
It shall be done.
We learn no other but the confident tyrant keeps still in Dunsinane and will endure our setting down before it.
'Tis her main hope, for where there is advantage to be given, both more and less have given her the revolt, and none serve with her but constrained things whose hearts are absent too.
Let our just senses attend the true event, and put we on industrious soldiership.
The time approaches that with due decision will make us know what we shall say we have and what we owe. Thoughts speculative, their unsure hopes relate, but certain issues, strokes, must arbitrate towards which advance the war.
Within Dunsinane, Macbeth sits astride her throne, confident in the protection of the prophecies and the castle's defenses.
The cry is still, they come. Our castle's strength will laugh a siege to scorn. Here let them lie till famine and the ague eat them up.
Wherefore was that cry?
The queen, my lord, is dead.
She should have died hereafter. There would have been time for such a word. Tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day till the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
My gracious lord, I must report what I say I saw, but know not how to do it.
Why say, sir?
As I stood my watch upon the hill, I looked towards Burnham, and anon methought, the woods began to move.
Liar and slave!
Let me endure your wrath if it be not so. Within these 3 miles you may see it coming, I say, a moving grove.
Go. If thou speakst false, upon the next tree thou shalt hang alive till famine cling thee. Fear not till Burnham Wood remove to Dunsinane, and now a wood comes toward Dunsinane. Arm and out. Ring the alarm bell. Blow, wind. Come, rack. At least we'll die with harness on our back.
As the English army reaches the castle's perimeter, they throw down their camouflage branches and begin the siege in earnest. The walls are breached, and Macduff enters the castle, seeking with single-minded tenacity the murderous Macbeth. Macbeth, for her part, sword in hand, stalks restlessly up and down the castle's great hall.
Ye have tied me to a stake! I cannot fly! But bear-like I must fight the course. What's he that was not born of woman? Such a one I am to fear, or none.
Turn, hellhound! Turn!
Of all men else, I have avoided thee. But get thee back. My soul's too much charged with blood of thine already.
I have no words for thee. My voice is in my sword, thou bloodier villain, than terms can give thee out!
Thou losest labor! Let fall thy blade on vulnerable crest. I bear a charmed life, which must not yield to one of woman born.
Despair thy charm, and let the angels whom thou still hast served tell thee that Macduff was from his mother's womb untimely ripped.
Accursed be the tongue that tells me so, for it hath cowed the better part of man.
Then yield thee, coward, and live to be the show, and gaze on the time we'll have thee as our rarer monsters painted on a pole and underwrit. Here may you see the tyrant.
I will not yield to kiss the ground beneath young Malcolm's feet and to be baited with a rabble's curse. Though Burnham Wood become to Dunsinane, and thou opposed being of no woman born, yet I will try the last. Lay on, Macduff, and damned be him that first cries, hold enough!
Outside Dunsinane's walls, Malcolm and the English army have delivered a crushing defeat to Macbeth's forces, and now await only word of the fate of the tyrant herself, which Macduff soon brings them.
I would the friends we missed were safe arrived.
Some must go off, and yet by these I see, so great a day as this is cheaply bought.
Hail, king, for so thou art. Behold! Where stands the usurper's cursed head? The time is free. Hail, King of Scotland!
are King of Scotland!
We shall not spend a large expense of time before we reckon with your several loves and make us even with you. My thanes and kinsmen, henceforth be earls, the first that Scotland in ever such an honor named. So thanks to all at once, and to each one whom we invite to see us crowned at Scone.
Thank you so much for joining us for this audio presentation of William Shakespeare's Macbeth. What you have heard tonight is an adaptation of our free Shakespeare in the Park tour, an example of the community and educational outreach that Cincinnati Shakespeare Company brings to our region. Tonight's presentation would not be possible without our seasoned sponsors, the Otto M. Buttig Family Foundation, the John Bridgeland, Crilly, Long, and Mason families honoring James R. Bridgeland Jr., the Ohio Arts Council, the Robert and Adele Schiff Family Foundation, the Carol Ann and Ralph V. Hale Jr. Foundation, and the generosity of tens of thousands of contributors to the Arts Wave community campaign. We also send special thanks to our digital season sponsors, Bartlett Wealth Management and Barnes Denig, and our park tour sponsor, the Makino Foundation. Thank you.